Hello and welcome back, everybody. This is Charles, and you are tuned into the Bringing It All Back Home podcast. It's another Sunday morning here, sunny Sunday, and it's also on the colder side. I did a photo shoot this morning down in Wildwood, and man, was I surprised. I think in the last couple of weeks, I considered cold where it was just hovering around 32 degrees, you know, a little bit over, a little bit under. But no, this morning it was a wind chill, I don't know what, but it was at least 25 degrees and it was windy down there. And man, did my hands feel cold within just a couple of photos. So yeah, I was doing a kind of revamped version of my typical photo shoot. Was going back to the car, warming up a little bit, jumping back out. Today's podcast is not about Wildwood or freezing. Today's all about going retro, a kind of homecoming, which is appropriate since this podcast is titled Bringing It All Back Home. But yeah, I did finally succumb to hunting down a nice clean copy of a camera I thought I couldn't even give away a few years ago. I did eventually sell it on eBay, and I think I kind of broke even. I think I sold it for maybe $100 or maybe a little bit over, and was able to pick up a new copy of a D200 for $90 as a make an offer. Got really, really lucky. Can't wait to talk about it. Just discover what it is that is bringing me joy over this quite outdated camera, and discover if possibly this particular camera, or to revisit a little bit of the CCD myth, maybe interesting for you too. So yeah, if you'd like, stick around, grab your favorite beverage. I've got just another mug of hot green tea, and yeah, ready to jump into some nostalgia with the D200. Nostalgia in general has been on my mind quite a lot lately. I know I've never quite let go of an impulse for nostalgia, mostly due to just the disparity between, say, when I was a wee bit younger and did not even begin to imagine I could have enough money to, say, you know, find a way to get certain types of gear. And then years pass and the gear becomes practically giveawayable. And yeah, it's kind of like you look back like, wow, you know, maybe I do want to jump out and find a G4 iMac, or a G3 Pismo PowerBook, or of course with cameras, you know, like maybe there was something you were aspiring to that has since become very, very affordable. You know, say like 2000s, you know, when the first D3 came out, that was a camera I was envious in some ways of, because I remember working with a gentleman who would keep coming to work with a D3, a Nikon D3. For me, nostalgia, especially in the last year or so, has really descended to a kind of fixed place where I'm finding anything at all that kind of rock my world between the ages of, say, 11 to maybe 14. So in my case, you know, this would be, what would that up to? 1973 to 77, or 74 to 77, which are pretty interesting years by themselves. It's no accident that people do return to that early 70s, mid 70s, just beginning late 70s era before everything kind of, you know, got a little bit less than amazing. But yeah, the glory of the early mid 70s, for me as someone keen on this nostalgia thing, yeah, I've been like finding like posters I used to have. Went off of this whole posters tangent, like trying to remember what kind of fun posters I got from Spencer Gifts to hang on my wall when I was 13 or 12. Album covers I would have, you know, prominently displayed. My eBay, I've been buying old Elton John vinyl that I no longer have, or finding this odd poster, which I miraculously discovered that was from Spencer Gifts, of a Harley chopper all done up. But yeah, you know, go figure. For some reason, this is really hitting a sustainable note in my head. It's not that I want to return to 1975 per se, or I want to go back and just be a 13-year-old again. But for whatever reason, that particular time for me is just hitting that note. It's just, there's just a little sustainable bit of joy when it comes to the nostalgia of things from that time. When it comes to cameras, I haven't always felt that that could actually translate. I've said it before in a podcast, but basically I was given a camera as a birthday gift when I was 13. It was a Konica C35, a lovely little rangefinder. Although I like to state, I didn't even know it was called a rangefinder. I didn't even know what a rangefinder was. And for at least 30 years, I just thought it was as my camera. You know, I'm like, what's a rangefinder? Well, that's my camera. It was a rangefinder, but I had no idea. I just knew of it as my camera. And even though it had limitations, it had a fixed lens equal roughly to 40. I think it was like a 38 millimeter. But anyway, I somehow got some very, very good shots out of it, which have held up pretty well. I used to shoot a lot of slide film with that guy. Still have some of the slides, especially the Kodak ones are holding up terrific. I tried to get a hold of an SLR when I started college. My dad had an old one, like an old Exacta, which I may have lasted two rolls before it crapped out on me. And then there was just a lull with not really anything going on with photography other than just taking it on short vacations or holidays. So I have a couple snaps from first time I was in Paris and the first time I was in Amsterdam, you know, again, same camera that I had. And it's not like it was such a long time. I got it at 13. I'm talking about photos I took 9 years later, you know, when I was 22. And then, yeah, then I did hang out with people who were really talented at photography, including my old housemate, Jerry Bennett. And I guess somehow along the line, he was, of course, shooting all kinds of different stuff and somebody else. And I eventually just pulled into, let me try medium format. So I literally jumped from like a rangefinder Konica that I knew what film to use. That's about it. You know, I didn't know anything about cameras to my first medium format. Took a couple of interesting, I guess, portrait shoots with that. I remember taking at least a picture of the college professor that knew Patty Smith, Paul Flick, picture of old pal Holly. It's a portrait shoot of some random young woman who just agreed to do a portrait shoot, and maybe two or three other roles, and then the camera unfortunately kind of disappeared. So yeah, back to the Konica for what the rest of the 80s and the early 90s. So by 94 or 5, now it's going just past 20 years old, I guess. By 96, by 20 years, it had pretty much had developed quite a few different problems, including like all the different stuff inside. Basically, it needed not just new seals, but even the area surrounding the mirror had gotten all flaked out. Because I used to take this thing on an incredible heat-seeking mission. Basically, I didn't take good care of this camera at all. So no surprise. It could have been refurbished, I guess. But I don't know. Why am I going on this long tangent about that? It was a camera that should have triggered some serious, serious nostalgia. It was the camera that I had for 20 years, a big chunk of my life from 13 to 33. That was the only camera really that I ever used. Again, with the exception of the brief period with the medium format Yashica 124G. So I, of course, bought one off of, I may have even bought two different ones off of eBay over the last 10 years. It didn't do anything for me. It just did nothing for me. It's just interesting. Like, I don't think it's just something else has to be there, you know, like nothing really rocked my world when I had that camera back in my hands. I'm like, yep, there it is. There's the Konica C35. Cool, you know, but it wasn't like I was suddenly against it, but it just didn't do anything to really rock my world in any way. So that's my long preamble about there are going to be times when if you buy something for purely nostalgic reasons, it may really let you down. You know what I mean? Like you may just go, yeah, there was a good reason why I left that behind. So here it is. It's February 2024. As I opened up season four, I did do an episode all about CCD, or maybe it was the end of season three. You know, CCD, is it all it's cracked up to be, this whole CCD craze, people going back to what they're referring to as, you know, digicams, the really, really small megapixel point and shoots, or as you go higher and higher up the food chain, whether it's Fuji, Kodak. But particularly this guy, the Nikon D200, I think was officially released like in December of 2005. I always think of it like as a 2006 camera. Semi-pro, you know, this is kind of like the D750 of its age, you know. Not trying to be the flagship, but not trying to be, you know, the consumer line either. So that, I guess that, you know, that's semi-pro slash consumer line, prosumer. This was the last CCD. So everything changed 3 years later, 2000, or maybe 2 years later, 2008, 2009, when they launched simultaneously the first full frame digital camera. The D3 started the whole revolution, and then the upgraded version of this guy, the D300. So where to begin? I think I've mentioned before, I was lucky enough to pick this guy up used 3 years after its release. So I got mine like in February of 2009. Yep, I got mine in February 2009, and it came out in December 2005. So yeah, my very, very first shoot after I got it from eBay, I think I paid close to $700 for it, and it did come with the extra motor drive, and it was extremely good shape. It was just brand new everything, it seemed. I got it with the original box. This is the first one, I mean, the very first D200. Got it with the original box, got it with the motor drive, got it with the brand new looking strap, all the paperwork, all the instruction booklets. And yeah, I'm looking at NX Studio, which will come into this conversation in a little bit. But yeah, my very, very first files with this guy look like they are from... Oh, wow. Oh, very interesting. So yeah, February 20th. And today's February 25th. So it's almost clockwork. I got my first D200 in February 2009, and I have returned to this camera in February of 2024, which seems way longer ago, you know, than the 15 years that that all adds up to. So, I mean, you got to throw in COVID, all the rest. It seems like it's almost 20 years ago. Anyhow, just to recap, had the camera, loved the camera. It was really my first, it was a first of so many things. It was my first, really my first DSLR. Yeah, well, obviously it was my first DSLR, but it was also the first camera that I was going to invest in different lenses. So that was a huge deal for me, even though previously, in between the Konica and this guy, I had gotten a wonderful Olympus OM-1 with its classic 51-4, shot that religiously for almost 5 years, 4 years. I never changed out the lens. I just remembered in the back of my head something, you know, the wonderful photographer and old pal Kyle Cassidy told me, like, he was, you know, saying, like, it's never a bad idea to just really get to know at least one lens before you jump around. Because I remember that especially. I had a conversation with him when I just received the 51-4, and I was talking about his work because he had just published his first book, you know, and I was talking about some of the pictures he was posting on Live Journal back then. And I remember, you know, thinking, like, in all my excitement, yeah, and I really want to get another lens that's going to do X, Y, and Z. Or I had my mind on a second Olympus lens, a second Zuiko. And I remember him just sort of like going, yeah, that sounds great, but you may want to think about just sticking with this lens for a little bit, you know, going into that one lens concept and really exploring what you can do with just one lens. And it stuck because I was finally able to pull some interesting results after that out of that 51-4. And I just liked it. I just liked the combo. And I liked the incredible deal I got on that little bundle. It was a wonderfully brassed up OM-1. I just kind of got it from a pawn shop in Vegas, you know, off of eBay. I think the whole thing was around $50. Straying a bit more off topic. The D200 really, really rocked my world in so many ways because it really opened up the idea that, okay, I did immediately throw on a true nifty 50, a brand new 1.8 50 millimeter, 1.8D, threw that on there, and then within less than a year, got a great deal on an absolutely brand new, slightly better than kit, 18-105 VR, you know, dedicated crop sensor lens. And then I, you know, did like what everyone does, I think, at some point if you get into Nikon. I found the classic Afghan girl lens. Like, at some point you're going to get swayed by trying out the 105-25. So yeah, when I look at my stuff, again, I'm reviewing some of these folders in NX Studio, I see it all starting in February of 2009, out there with the 50, and not that far away, you know, I suddenly am shooting with the 105, and I'm shooting with the 18 equivalent of, I guess, 28 to 105. So I'm shooting with a dedicated manual focus 105, and I'm shooting with the actual zoom autofocus 18-105. So I've got three lenses now. Like, look at me. I've got three lenses. And the next thing you know, I'm buying a freaking speed light. Like, all this stuff started coming together so quickly. None of these things had in any way been part of my world when I was just simply shooting with the OM-1 or shooting with the Kanika. Essentially, you know, I was interested in photography since the age of, I don't know, 14, at least 13. But over a period of almost 30 years, I never once looked into speed lights. I never once looked into changing lenses, getting a camera that could take adaptable lenses. My only stray into something more advanced was that brief period in the mid-80s where I dabbled in medium format. And that did linger because to this day, you know, I'm still madly in love with medium format. Like, and who wouldn't be? So the D200 was a time of incredible firsts for me. And as I look through these photos, just having a motor drive, just being able to get that initial response of these very far more advanced digital files than the typical point and shoot that you could grab at any time during the noughts. So maybe that's part of why I still have such a visceral attraction to this particular camera, because it was a time of true discovery. I can't emphasize enough, like, it doesn't matter how seemingly advanced the discovery is. If anything, simple discoveries are just as powerful. So during this period, for the first time, I invested in a proper tripod, not a little flimsy guy you might use, you know, for using a, I don't know, like a digital camcorder back in the day. No, a proper freaking heavy tripod, which could withstand long exposures on a slippery surface in the wind, you know, or long exposures in the sand as the waves were coming in. That rocked my world insanely. Like, oh my God, look at me. I'm doing long exposures with a tripod. Look at me. I've got an ND filter. You know, look at me. I'm using a speed light. All these things happened with the D200. And it was a wonderful time period. And essentially, it did go on pretty long. You know, I think, when did I get the D300? Yeah, I had to take another peek at that timeline. So yeah, I owned the D200, or rather, it was my only camera for digital for 2.5 years. But they, what a 2.5 years that was. I can't find any other period in my entire adult so-called interest in photography that matched those 2 years, those 2.5 years, because those, let's just say, whatever, what, the 30-ish months involve all these first-time experiences, all these absolute beginner steps, which had just wonderful feedback. It was like, oh my God, I'm getting better. You know, I'm actually making a growth here artistically and technologically, and I'm getting comfortable with this shit, you know. And the camera is there, just going, "I got you. Let's do this thing," you know. It was so much fun, and what led me though to go and leave it behind was that darn Nikon D300 thing. So again, just to recap, I bought this used 3 years after it was introduced. You know, came out in, let's just say, 2006, got it in 2009. Well, now it's getting close to 2012. It's just 3 months away from 2012. Well, guess what came out in 2009? The D300. So I think it was just sort of one of those things where the used prices of the D300 started coming into range again. They weren't, you know, I didn't have to invest some at that time insane amount of money to get a D300. They were coming back in line, and I suppose I just was able to save a little bit from my tax return, what have you, and I was able to move ahead, and that's what it felt like. The D200 into D300 felt like you were moving ahead, mostly for just low light and a bit of a bump in megapixel. I think, what did it, went from the 10 megapixel to the 12, or, and it could do, instead of just 12-bit or 10-bit, it could do, I think, 12 or 14-bit. So that, yeah, a little more dynamic range, supposedly. Definitely a bump in speed with the, you know, the battery grip, so you could do a little bit better motor drive stuff. And yeah, that's where my journey continued. By the beginning of 2012, kept doing more things with speed lights, working. I went to visit Jerry once and worked in a portrait studio and did some stuff with strobes. And the journey just continued until, you know, at the very least, a solid 4 years with the D300. And then it just kind of gotten broken down again into, well, I need to get a full frame now. So I kept the D300 as my crop sensor for longer range, which most people still do to this day. You know, if you're out there shooting surfing or you love wildlife stuff, you typically are going to save at least one body for crop sensor to get a little bit of that extra reach, hence the everlasting popularity of the discontinued Nikon D500, or you've just switched to mirrorless and invested in these longer mirrorless lenses to try to make up, or you have the teleconverters. So when I was thinking about this episode and rolling it around in my head, part of me thought I would revisit the CCD thing. And yet this morning, reviewing one more time the articles that are out there, the YouTube videos that are out there, my previous podcast about CCD versus CMOS, I'm kind of just going to leave that one alone. I just don't think that's enough of a reason why I would 100% recommend the D200. But from my own personal experiences, I think this is where the nostalgia really kicks in. And a little bit of what is true, I was able, I think, in a slightly less, you know, rosy-tinted glasses way, to reopen an app I haven't used in years, the NX Studio from Nikon, and review all the things I shot for those 2.5 years with the D200. I was obsessed with shooting in RAW, which was a good thing now looking back, because I can go in now, especially through this app, and see all of the color science that Nikon invested back then into the CCD. I can open these up without any kind of like interpretation by Adobe or interpretation by Capture One. This is a raw converter that is absolutely as faithful, I think, as you could possibly get to the raw files. Written by Nikon, you know, there to create this continuity. And there's this wonderful feature where I can just simply choose the info file. And not only does it tell me, of course, the camera and the lens, but it tells me what they call the, not just image settings, but the optimized image settings. So essentially, did I do anything with, you know, the... Then you'd think of this for JPEG, of course, but essentially, did I do anything for the profile? So often I was shooting in a profile that, you know, was just, say, standard or the profile for portrait. But most of the time, I had just used a kind of landscape, a tweaked landscape profile. So my landscape profile, used the sRGB, what they call mode 3. And I just, for whatever reason, left the saturation a little bit higher than usual because I think maybe it's had to do with the CCD or the early sensors. I didn't feel that colors like the grays and blues and essentially the shore colors you might see over the ocean, I didn't think that they were ridiculously saturated. I thought they just had a tiny hint of saturation. They didn't come off like in your face crazy. It would only be when I would go and shoot with the same setting where there was something much more in your face, you know, any kind of products or like I have a shot of my old friend Jim Gracie in his what was what was left of his room with all these books, you know, and I just wanted to take a shot of his half mad book collection, and they were, and I look back now and like any book cover that was red, yeah, that's where like the extra saturation, you know, like Nikon and their reds seem to pop a little bit too much. But for just shooting stuff at the shore, shooting stuff after these storms, these summer storms, the tonal variation with the extra saturation was just fine because there's not too much red that you're going to find on the beach or over the ocean or in the sky, I guess. Anyhow, what's cool about the RAW thing is, and this app, NX Studio, is I can go in with the adjustments. Yeah, I can go in here, and there's basically, it's right there. It's right up top. It's called their Picture Control RAW. And I can try out any of the other original profiles, or I can even tweak it. So in other words, right now, like say I'm looking at this picture, and I have it on an enhanced saturation, I can just click this little icon and go right back to the more standard one, or the more refined one, or the one that I have it on by default, my custom on enhanced. Same thing with the tone compression, same thing with sharpening, same thing with these three different color modes back then, mode 1, 2, and 3. So yeah, very cool. Like, so in other words, in this software, when you convert to JPEG, it is going to use that camera picture profile essentially that you set, or you can go back here in RAW, which you'd expect, you know, and be able to just try something else out. So yeah, I was able to reopen these photos, and what really grabs me, other than this one particular day, which I at the time labeled Magic Light, which was just the most amazing light and the most incredible clouds combined over the beach here that I've ever been lucky enough to observe with a camera in my hand. Out of the 15 years or 16 years since I've been back at the shore, I have never once been in that same situation. I think I've seen something almost quite as good, but of course I didn't have a camera with me. And these are those fast-moving changes that can happen after a storm where some really wonderful clouds move back out to sea, and you have this amazing mix of wonderfully diffuse light, but at the same time these incredibly photogenic clouds lying really, really low to the ocean. And yeah, it was one of those days in June where all this happened in probably within maybe just 10 to 15 minutes, some of my absolute favorite shots ever. But where I do keep going back to this camera is the stuff I shot in the snow. Now, it just so happened that between 2009 and 2010, we got a pretty good amount of snow. You know, here at the shore, which is which is notable, you know. So yeah, when I look back at these shots in the snow, I'm really impressed with how it held the details in the highlights. I now, according to all the specs from when this camera came out, it's not like there's more dynamic range in the highlights. I think at the time it was known for having compared to other cameras out there in 2005, 2006, it was known to having a little bit more dynamic range past the midtones, you know, and obviously into the highlights. But D300 had even more dynamic range, including, of course, in the midtones and the highlights. I don't know what it is, but there's something about my pictures in the snow with this camera that just grabbed me. I'm really, really impressed with the detail and the color, of course. So yeah, you know, is there some magic that you're going to encounter in all situations with a classic CCD 10 megapixel camera from 2005 or 6? It's going to be debatable. And I think, you know, like there's, I think this debate is still centered mostly on if you're a Leica freak, should you obsess about going backward and getting an M9 versus all the CMOS sensors since the M9 has been discontinued, because there's a cult of M9 users out there who just really like the way it renders, quote-unquote, straight out of camera, meaning they don't have to keep making all these highlight and shadow adjustments, which it seems you have to do on the 240 and on to make it look like the M9. But anyhow, I just know, I'm going to wrap this guy up, that I thought it would be inevitable, since these guys are not very expensive, relatively speaking, that I would eventually drift back into one, but I did not expect the incredible amount of just high-octane nostalgia and good vibes, you could say, as a cliche, just holding this in my hand and getting this guy back and hearing the shutter. Everything about it is just rocking. Cheers to the classic era of the D200. It's made me really interested one more time in some retro lenses, maybe from Nikon. So I have my eye on a 51-4. Another version of the D Nifty 50. I thought maybe I would bring that back. Not really that thrilled with going back to the zoom, which I still have, the 18-105. I think I've exhausted that lens at the time. Yeah, that's one of those, like, at the time it set me loose, it set me free. I could shoot one angle. But now, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be using that one too much. If I need to maybe expand where this guy goes, the D200, I'm pretty sure I'm going to keep it a normal, some kind of normal lens on there. So maybe the 1.450 will do it. But yeah, thumbs up to the D200 experience, rolling all the way back, you know, completely bringing it back all the way home with this one. I hope to get a new lens for it, you know, soon, and maybe do a new shoot with it and find where I'm going to use it. I do know, though, I'm going to continue to just open NX Studio with it, which to me really is a perfect fit. And with my workflow, I'm just essentially creating a dated folder, which lives on my external and gets backed up. You know, so I basically bring in my images using an app that just imports wherever I want the stuff to go. I label my folder with the year, the month, the date, and a little tiny description, and they're all there together. And I'm always working in Lightroom, of course, Lightroom Classic. But for this, I just think, yeah, no, I'm gonna continue to open up NX Studio, navigate right to that latest import, and have fun using the Nikon software. You know, touching base, reaching back into the past, and opening up those CCD sensor files. You know, the thing that really cracked me up the most, though, the person who sold me this didn't even mention that it had a working battery. So I went ahead on Amazon and got a $15 battery. Didn't mention in any way that it's going to come with a camera card, although they listed it as being tested. So I went out and bought a camera card, a 16 gigabyte compact flash, you know, And when I get the camera, there is a compact flash card in there, and it says 64. I'm like, whoa, they're giving me a free 64 gigabyte compact flash card? Holy crap. Actually, no, it's a 64 megabyte compact flash. like just this morning, I was driving down a while, but I'm still thinking, like, wow, 64 megabytes of storage on that card. You know, like if that card was in my Sony right now, I would take two or three shots, it would be done. I would get two or three shots out of it, or maybe not even two. You know, my, yeah, 64 megabytes on your card. So I guess they would just leave it on JPEG standard, maybe, and that would give them something. I don't know. But yeah, I just loved it. But anyway, I got a wonderful, wonderful deal. I did finally put it through the shutter test. It had like 13,000 clicks on it. So yeah, I really lucked out. I tried to clean the sensor a little bit this morning. It was just a little bit of dust, nothing major. Hopefully I did an okay job. And yeah, that's my report. I hope to keep you guys posted, and have a good one.